Now 84.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. The American Community Survey estimates the overall rate of people with disabilities in the United States population in just 2015, that was, 3 years ago, was 12.6%. Now, those below age 65 showed an average of 10% of disability, but those over 65, demonstrated over 35.4%. That's over one-third of our geriatric population can be considered to be, in some degree, disabled.
As of 2010, there were 57 million people with a disability living in the United States. Of these, there are 7.5 million with a hearing difficulty, 8 million with vision disabilities, 31 million who had difficulty walking or climbing stairs, and almost 4 million who use a wheelchair to assist with mobility.
Now, this compares with 11.6 million people who used a cane or crutches or even a walker. And don't forget the 2.4 million with Alzheimer's disease, senility, or even dementia. There are also an additional 12 million who require the assistance of others in order to perform one or more activities of daily living or instrumental activities of daily living such as bathing, dressing, doing housework, and preparing meals.
Although the ADA or Americans with Disabilities Act covers public and government buildings as well as things such as sidewalk regulations to protect the handicapped, the ADA does not cover strictly residential private apartments or homes.
So renting an apartment or home or even buying a home, whether it's new or not, often poses a major difficulty if you or someone you know needs a living place that is both safe and convenient for those with disabilities. So Carmen and I have laid out some of our suggestions when looking at travel or looking for residences for handicapped people. So let's start with a handicapped person in a private car. In the first case, as a front passenger. We already know about shopping center parking with handicapped spaces that allow enough room on each side of the car so that a handicapped person can get out with the least amount of difficulty.
Most of these spaces also allow a handicapped driver to do the same. Unfortunately, downtown or inner city parking often does not allow the same. This, at least to me, seems to be something that is not talked about enough.
There is something called a belt harness that wraps around a person who has difficulty getting out of a chair or a bed that just wraps around the handicapped person and helps an assistant. Cost, well, it's just about $25, and I've seen it available from Amazon.com as well as other internet stores.
There is also a car caddy that wraps around the upper part of the window frame that helps the handicapped person get out of the car. Its cost is around $10.
The seat assist acts as a portable lifting seat which can support up to 220 pounds, and it provides 70% assistance with getting up and out of a seat. Here the price is around $85 to $100.
Speaking of seats, there are several different types of swivel seats that allow a passenger to swivel 360 degrees to get more easily out of a car seat. Cost can be less than $20 for some.
How about homes? How can homes be changed to allow easier and safer access in private homes? Let's start with the garage. You arrive in your car to a one or two car garage. Now, I have entered and exited cars in single car garages. I myself have had difficulties getting in and out of the car in such circumstances, as the garage seems to barely allow enough space to open a door in order to enter or exit the car.
Even two-car garages If there is a second car in them, afford little extra space, for example, to allow a wheelchair beside the car to accommodate a handicapped person.
Then there's the garage itself. Most often the floor of a garage is below the grade of the living quarters of a residential home. Often a handicapped person needs to build a small ramp to get from the garage into the house. The longer the ramp, the easier it is to use the ramp. However, of course, the longer it is, the more space it takes up. Once you get into the home, there are several problems that a person who is physically handicapped might encounter.
For one, the door. Most inside doors in homes are now more than 32 inches wide, often just 27 inches wide. Now, 32 inches may afford sufficient width for most wheelchairs. The key word is sufficient and not ample.
Many times wheelchair handicapped persons, when going through the doorway, bump into the doorway's trim, both injuring themselves and the doorway itself. So we propose that the home have no less than 36-inch doors. Also, there's often a door jam that stops the wheelchair from easily moving from one room to another. Some other type of transition of the floor from one room to another might be considered.
If you are considering moving into an older home, you may need to resize a doorway. This might include not only widening the opening, but you may need to relocate wiring and receptacle positions so that they are not in the way.
Speaking of receptacles, I've noted that many, if not most, receptacles in homes are built too low for people with handicaps. Since most formal dining room tables are 30 inches tall, and even informal dining tables are often no more than 27 inches off the floor, why not have a home built with the receptacles just below the height for easy access, say 25 inches above floor level? Also, having the receptacles horizontally placed rather than vertically could also help the handicapped.
Getting back to doorways for a moment, you often need more space on each side of the doorway in order to allow wheelchairs to be able to move easily and negotiate turns if necessary.
How about showering? That can be a real pain and dangerous for some, as they need to get in and out of a chair or climb over a threshold or even the side of a tub. And some of the easy enter tubs made for handicapped people can be very expensive.
The other day, I saw a bathroom on the YouTube that was built without a shower, stall, or a tub.
So how did the owners take showers?
Well, the shower head was centered in the room with a floor drain underneath. Since the entire room floor was tiled and waterproof, all that the owner needed to do was elevate the waterproofing around 6 inches up on each wall.
But really, not to worry, the entire floor was built so that the center of the bathroom was slightly lower than the walls.
Water flowed into the drain even at the highest rate of water flow. And believe me, it looked great. And the owners had no handicap that I know of that necessitated this kind of bathroom.
Sinks in both the bathrooms and the kitchen may also be lowered with enough room under the sink to allow a person with a handicap to get comfortably close to the sink, even in a wheelchair. This probably would necessitate the purchase of a very shallow sink, but these are available as well.
You may be wondering where to get the money to make these occasionally expensive modifications to older homes and to build new ones, but the government provides what is called a specialty adapted housing grant, which can help finance the expenditure of door with remodeling.
Every time I change a towel rack, I buy a grab bar instead. Now, these simple additions boost stability in and out around the shower, tub, or toilet, but also around the room. Remember that a bathroom can have the slipperiest floors in the home. How about cabinets? High cabinets are difficult to reach for people with mobility issues. Move everyday items such as toiletries and towels in the bathroom and dishes in the kitchen to lower cabinets for easier access. Single lever water faucet handles do not have washers, so they require little maintenance. Just one lever controls the flow and the temperature, which can make life much easier for people with disabilities.
Doorknobs are often difficult for some handicapped persons to turn. In these cases, door lever handles are much easier to use. But be careful, these often have to be bought specifically for right and left-handed opening doors.
And be careful, as dogs can often use these levers to open a door and escape. We talked about using door levers instead of door knobs. You can change the rounded draw knobs for pull handles, which can also be very helpful. There are grab bars and riser seats for toilets to make them more accessible and easier to enter and exit.
Have you ever noticed how difficult it can be to get items off the upper shelves in the kitchen cabinets? Even non-handicapped persons have a difficult time and often need a step tool to get items out. What often happens is that we relegate those items we almost never use to the top shelf.
So for many handicapped people, this top shelf becomes wasted, useless space. But not anymore. There is now a simple device that allows you to pull a handle on the top shelf and easily move the entire shelf down to a position that is very easy to access. I know, because we have installed several of these in our kitchen. Now the top shelves can be used all the time. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
In the first half of the show, Carmen and I talked about changes that can be made to a home to make life easier for the handicapped, especially those who use wheelchairs. There are many debilitating diseases that also make life difficult for those afflicted with the diseases.
Some attack the muscles in our body and affect our physical abilities, while others affect our brain function and impair our thought processes.
Take rheumatoid arthritis, for example. It is an autoimmune disease that causes chronic inflammation in joints and organs throughout the body. Now, it's fairly common and affects around 1.3 million people in America alone. Its symptoms are often painful and debilitating. People diagnosed with it may go through periods of remission for months or even years where symptoms are just not noticed. But being a progressive illness, there's often joint destruction and physical disability.
Treatments have improved over time, and the prognosis for those with RA has improved as well. With medications that offer better control and help prevent flare-ups, so patients are able to live somewhat uninterrupted lives.
Now, we've been talking mostly about physical disabilities, but there are mental disabilities as well that also make daily life difficult. Take schizophrenia, for example. Often those with schizophrenia have great difficulty differentiating between reality and imagined experiences, and this may make them behave abnormally in social situations and have abnormal emotional responses to everyday situations. Though genetic factors have been identified as one of the causes of this disease, mental health experts still can't pinpoint specific causes.
Often people who suffer with schizophrenia spend their lives in monitored isolation due to the disease's extreme psychological barriers that prevent them from having friends or a job.
The most common form of treatment is antipsychotic medications. Maybe we'll take one entire program to talk just about the mental health diseases. When I was young, poliomyelitis was a great fear of all parents. We called it just polio. It's a disease that's caused by a spread of the polio virus. It affects the central nervous system and can lead to painful, partial, or even full paralysis. We all know that vaccinations to the polio virus have helped prevent the spread of this disease in many parts of the world. But it's still a big concern today due to its extremely debilitating complications.
How about muscular dystrophy? We think of it as a single disease, but it is really a group of related and inherited disorders that contribute to muscle loss and weakness over time.
The effects can target all muscles or just a group of muscles in the body, causing severe decreases in mobility, lung failure, scoliosis, cardiac fibrosis, and tightening of the muscles around the main joints that cause the complications that can often lead to death. Another disease that people think of as a single entity is cerebral palsy. There are actually several different types of cerebral palsy which affect the functions of the brain and the nervous system.
These symptoms include muscle tightening, tremors, speech problems, slow growth, and problems swallowing. There are treatment plans that include therapies, surgeries, or even medications to help lessen the severity of symptoms.
And long-term care, it's usually required, as this is simply a lifelong debilitating disease. Well, how about chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, often termed COPD? It's certainly a debilitating disease that is suffered by many. It's a condition which makes it increasingly difficult to breathe due to permanent damage of the lungs and constriction of the airways. What's the cause? Well, you could probably guess that. Mostly smoking.
Coughing and breathing difficulties usually get worse as this disease progresses, and many who suffer from COPD also have chronic bronchitis or emphysema.
And over time, those with COPD have trouble breathing, and the irreversible damage to the lungs weakens those lungs, the center of oxygen exchange. The World Health Organization has named COPD one of the top single causes of death.
Cystic fibrosis is a disease that stems from a defective gene that causes the creation of thick mucus in the lungs and pancreas, which leads not only to life-threatening breathing problems and lung infections, but also to digestive problems.
If caught early, a treatment plan can be formulated to help lessen symptoms and improve the rate of survival. Now, in cystic fibrosis, treatment usually includes antibiotics, oxygen therapy, and sometimes even lung transplants, along with, well, healthy lifestyle changes. Unfortunately, the average lifespan here is about 37 years.
The first disease that you may not have heard of in our list of debilitative diseases is scleroderma. This is both a connective tissue disorder and an autoimmune disease.
Changes occur in the skin, the blood vessels, internal organs, and even the muscles. Once it's diagnosed, symptoms usually progress slowly over time and most often lead to skin darkening, thickening, and hardening, which causes a tight, mask-like appearance, especially on the face. Unfortunately, when this disease spreads to the internal organs, like the heart, the kidneys, the lungs, and the GI tract, the organs begin to fail, leading to complications like lung problems, including cancer and heart failure.
Many of you are familiar with multiple sclerosis. We have recently talked about this disease on the Hey Doc show, so we will just glance over it here.
It's also an autoimmune disease that affects the central nervous system and is more common in women than men. There's often extensive nerve damage with symptoms that include muscle spasms, difficulty walking or moving the limbs, bowel and bladder problems, even loss of vision, dizziness, slurred speech, trouble swallowing, and even more.
Some patients experience symptoms on an ongoing basis, while others have periods of attacks that may last a few days or months at a time.
Some people can live a normal life with MS, while others' health and mobility, well, it just declines over time.
There are medications and different forms of therapies that can slow the progress of the disease.
Another disabling disease that we've talked about on a past show is Parkinson's disease. Famous people with the disease include George W. Bush, Michael J. Fox, Robin Williams, and Muhammad Ali. The news has even, on occasion, suggested that both former President Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary may have shown some signs of the disease as well. In this disease, which is a brain disorder, there are bodily tremors and difficulties with movement or controlling functions. It's actually the most common disorder among the elderly and usually affects people after age 50.
If you're left untreated, the disease will get worse and lead to total disability and ultimately to a person's death.
How about amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, better known as Lou Gehrig's disease, which affects the nerve cells in the brain and the spinal cord that control voluntary muscle movement? When neurons or nerve cells in the brain can no longer communicate with muscles, those with ALS suffer from muscle weakening, twitching, and an inability to move their arms, legs, and body.
Over time, the condition gets worse. It's when the muscle in the chest and respiratory areas are affected that this disease becomes fatal.
Famous people who suffered from this disease, apart from Lou Gehrig, include Jim Catfish Hunter, the baseball player, and Stephen Hawking, the famed theoretical physicist and author of the bestseller, A Brief History of Time. Now, a lot of you may be considering sending a saliva sample to test for your ancestry or genealogy. However, you should be aware that you might not be anonymous thanks to genealogy databases. In the past, we only thought about paternity tests, where you could find the father or siblings with DNA testing. But now, with advanced techniques in genomics, you can now actually identify third cousins, even fourth cousins in some cases. In fact, one such test named GEDmatch, which is really intended solely for a genealogical research, was instrumental in tracking the elusive, if you remember, Golden State Killer suspect.
This year, investigators captured a suspect nearly 32 years after the killer's rampage ended by using crime scene DNA to conduct what is known as a long-range familial search.
The search helped law enforcement identify a third cousin of the serial rapist and killer, while additional data led investigators to the suspect, who took a standard DNA test, which confirmed his identity.
For about 60% of the anonymous individuals whose genomes were analyzed, all of them of European descent, the researchers were able to find a relative at the level of third cousin or closer.
For about 15% of these people, the closest relative found was a second cousin or closer, the study showed. The data contained in genetic databases represents only a small portion of the total U.S. population. But once genetic databases cover roughly 2% of a population, nearly any person could be matched to at least a third cousin level and conceivably be identified by DNA.
If you or any of your family members have been prescribed any medication that are being rejected or denied at the pharmacy, and you feel that the medication is both appropriate and medically necessary, then you need to make your voice known. Contact your state and federal representatives and tell them what's happening. It is only with this that we can right the wrongs that are being perpetrated on a large part of our citizenry and their human rights when they are denied appropriate and necessary treatment.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com. where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.